Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Dr. Kate's Revolution Radio. This is Dr. Kate. I've been away for a little while doing a number of different things, and I'm pleased to be joining you back this evening. There are not too many folks in the chat room, but I'd like to welcome you all. Thank you for joining us, and a special shout-out to our soldiers out there. And we are trusting our military to defend us from all enemies, domestic and foreign. And that brings us to our show this evening. We have a special guest this evening, Helen Tanzi, the director of the Article II Super PAC, will be joining us this evening to talk about a lot of things, the corruption in the Dems and the Rs, Republicans, the Ron Paulers meet the Pumas. Looks like what happened to the Ron Paulers in the Republican National Convention was the same thing that happened to the Pumas in the 2008 Democratic National Convention. And I'm going to start out this evening with a little advertisement for Article II Super PAC. There are a number of excellent videos and ads that have been put up in the Washington Times. I believe there are other ads running elsewhere, and we hope that that you will take a look at these and listen to them. So, here we go.
Barack Obama has usurped the presidency, and in so doing is now on the fast track to destroy America. Despite Obama's anti-American policies and disdain for the rule of law, there's a more basic and fundamental issue that needs to be addressed. It is the fact that Barack Obama was never constitutionally qualified to be President of the United States because he is not a natural-born citizen as mandated under Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution. Simply put, Obama was not born to American citizen parents. That's parents, plural. He is an unlawful president. Answering the call to defend the Constitution, fellow Americans across the country have joined forces and proudly announced Article 2 Super PAC. Article 2 Super PAC's overall goal is to ensure that citizens and elected officials clearly understand Article 2 and the definitive meaning of natural-born citizen as intended by our founding fathers, thereby working to create a legally binding vetting apparatus which will ensure that all future presidential and vice presidential candidates are constitutionally eligible. We at Art 2 Super PAC are raising the needed resources to develop materials to promote our message across the country, assisting with key state ballot challenges, assembling our legal team of constitutional and elections law experts, and so much more. Please do your part to help save America for future generations and help support Art 2 Super PAC. You may donate online at www.art2superpac.com. That's A-R-T, the number 2, superpac.com. Or you may mail a donation to P.O. Box 940-661, Simi Valley, California, 93094. We must work together to get our country back on course. We must throw off this ever-tightening noose of tyranny. We must preserve the founding principles upon which this great country was founded. Paid for by Article 2 Super PAC, not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
Thank you, Article 2 Super PAC. One of the most recent activities of the Article 2 Super PAC is to put out and publicize a letter, a very public letter that was sent to the Commission on Presidential Debates. We hope to see this information further spread out there. And this evening, we're going to be talking about a range of those. Now, my blog, Dr. Kate's View, and my earlier work on Texas Darling started out with a focus on eligibility, and my blog is focused on the Constitution, and for the bulk of 2 years investigated the historical roots of the destruction of the Constitution, the rise of the left and the liberal fascism, and the amazing turn of events that led to the usurpation of the presidency by Barack Obama. You know, there was a lot going on in 2008, most of which everyone was tired of George Bush, and it seemed like if Mickey Mouse had run, he would have beat George Bush. But Barack Obama, due to his tremendous backing by, I will call, the international financiers, the New World Order cabal, you know, beginning with George H.W. Bush, and right on through, all the presidents have been hand-selected by the elite to usher in a new era or a new world order in which essentially there are two classes of people, the elite and the slaves, and you can guess who we are. Well, Barack Obama had his path completely wiped clean by the CIA and ignored by everybody else, and the machinery was put to work to engineer his usurpation. Now, in the face of this usurpation, we have not stopped in terms of our efforts to expose him. There have been hundreds of court cases, and we found that the judiciary is completely corrupt and has ruled against the law and against the people. But then again, you step back and you look at the judiciary itself, and it is the branch, one of the branches of government that's gone completely AWOL and awry to essentially undermine our Constitution. We should be dealing with the common law if we're in constitutional area, the common law. Instead, we have a whole new system, federal law, state law, a whole system of statutes, created law, man's created law, that has really undermined us, and we've been asleep. Maybe not so always, but for most of my life, I know that I've been asleep. You know, I did what I thought I was supposed to do, go to school, get the degrees, et cetera, et cetera. And look what it's turned out. We are at the precipice. So the thing that is very concerning right now, we know that the Republicans and the Democrats are basically the same party. They put on a show so that we can think we have an illusion of choice. But bottom line is Mitt Romney and Barack Obama work for the same people. And Mitt Romney will probably be the next term of George H.W. Bush, as they are good buddies and so forth. So I'd like to begin to start introducing our guest as we wait for her to join us. Remember the early days, 2009, the Tea Party. Lots of people take credit for the origin of the Tea Party, but all I know is I was in Washington that September in 2009 for the first gathering of the people, and it was 2 million people, 2.1 million, I believe, that was the final mark. And at that sign, at that rally, there were lots of signs about Obama's eligibility. and his ineligibility and his lack of constitutional muster. And there were all other kinds of Tea Party signs and so forth, but the rally was really about the Constitution. It was a great rally. I met Diamond Tiger there and a number of other people, and I met Helen Tanziat there. Helen had not begun her blog yet, which is a terrific one called The Tea Room, which I'll post in a second. But I met her and a number of other people at that rally. And from then on, I'll let Helen tell you the rest of her story, but Helen went on to be involved in with Pastor Reverend Dr. James Manning, David James Manning, James David Manning, and in the first Columbia CIA usurpation trial, which where there was a people's grand jury and Obama was convicted on all counts. And that was a 7-day trial that really did the work that the regular juries and that our Constitution should have done. And then went on to establish a tea room and do a number of other things. And I think a couple of years ago, or at least a year ago, started on the Article II Super PAC. And I see that she is on our line, so I would like to welcome to Revolution Radio, Helen Tanzi. Good evening.
Hello, how are you?
I'm just fine. How are you? How great that we can have a conversation tonight.
Yeah, I'm so looking forward to it. Thank you for having me on.
Yes, now I understand you were with Mark Gillar, last night or a couple nights ago?
We did a Tea Party Power Hour interview.
Wonderful.
On Monday. I think it was Monday night.
How was that, Helen? How was that interview?
It went really well. Mark is one awesome interviewer, and he's one of those individuals who just keeps things rolling, but he asks some awesome questions. So some of them I kind of, you know, it was like, whoa, that came out of left field. so it was kind of interesting. But I enjoyed it and received some pretty decent and positive feedback from Commander Kirchner and other individuals that listened to the interview. So I don't feel like I made a fool of myself.
Well, I'm sure, you know, you don't ever make a fool of yourself, and I'm sure it was a power hour, and I congratulate you on securing that interview. And was it all about Article 2?
No, we focused on Article 2. What the focus of our conversation was primarily on natural-born citizen, Article 2 in the Constitution, the history of it, why the article is so important to our national security, why having anyone with any kind of suspected foreign allegiance serving as POTUS or even running as POTUS, why that creates national security issues, so on and so forth. So we primarily focused on the Constitution, and then, of course, we delved into the Commission for Presidential Debates and had a discussion with regards to their requirements of presidential candidates that they demand these candidates must meet in order to participate in any of the debates that they'll be holding in the fall.
Outstanding. And since most of the listeners know, and I know my readers know, since I put up a post about that letter, what kind of response have you received, if any, yet from the commission? Let's start with them, and then give us an overview of what kinds of things people are saying about this letter.
Thus far, we've not received any communication from any from anyone on the commission. The letter that we wrote and sent was directed to both the co-chairmen. One is a gentleman by the name of Frank, his last name is Frankenhoff. And the second individual is Mr. McCurry. And neither one of the individuals, of course, they received the letter via registered mail on Friday, and neither one of those individuals have responded. We also sent the same letter to all of the commission members, and we have not heard anything from them as well. And some of those commission members are folks like former President Jimmy Carter, former President Bill Clinton, and a handful of other individuals, that some folks like Alan Simpson, who was a Rhino Republican from Wyoming, and others that also received the letter. We have not, when it comes to posting the letter and getting the letter out to our grassroots, we did not post it until we received confirmation that the registered letters were indeed received by the co-chairman of the commission. Following that, we released the letter as an open letter to the public, so the public knew what we were stating in the letter and so on. And the feedback we've received from the grassroots has been very positive. Many individuals have taken up their pen along with a piece of paper and started writing letters themselves. Others have called. Others are certainly cheering us on and encouraging us to continue to do what we're doing. So very favorable.
And I know that we all talked about this letter, and you know, I basically put it in the post, do we expect them to do anything? Probably not. But this is the ramping up, it seems, of Article 2's mission, which is to continue to expose this as much as we can everywhere. And in that regard, I wondered if you could just give our listening audience just an overview of the ramping up that has really started happening, in the last several months with the Washington Times ads, and where you're going, where are the next ads going, and so forth, and what's the schedule, if you will. I know we're dependent on fundraising, and of course anyone who wants to donate is welcome to check the link in the chat room right now. But where would you see, after Article 2 Super PAC got organized and went through the first, ups and downs and so forth of finding the right people, when did this ad campaign begin, and with what, and where do you see it going?
Well, Article 2 Super PAC, the individuals that started Article 2 Super PAC was a family of bloggers, and what the genesis, which I'll certainly get to answering more specifically your question, but the genesis was a family of bloggers that none of us knew each other, but we kind of, sent emails to each other from time to time and so on. But all of us were pretty intensely focused on either Article 2 and or Natural Born Citizen and so on. And it was just a small group of us. There were like two or three of us. And we took the reason we did what we did is because our posters were saying, when is somebody going to do something about this? And I can certainly remember you, Kate, taking several steps to try to empower your posters to get engaged and to become involved. And so on. So in many respects, you were a model for me when it came to what we as bloggers are somewhat responsible for, because we've taken a lead in educating folks that come to our spot, our blogs, and so on and so forth. So that being said, we formulated, we organized, and then of course we launched. And whenever you start something like a PAC or a C3, a nonprofit or a business, it takes some time for people to kind of get to know you, to become familiar with you, to feel comfortable with you, and so on. And so after several months of building relationships and reaching out to many different constituencies, we started receiving phone calls and outreach from individuals that wanted to help us. And one of those is a handful of donors who have started to help us underwrite the expense of advertising and so on. So we decided, or it was brought to us, with the opportunity of running a full-page ad in the Washington Times. And, of course, our message has always been one of education, one of informing the voter to let them be empowered to make a decision as to who they're going to vote for and what they're truly voting for. And we decided Washington Times was the perfect vehicle, because we were also targeting Congress, and we continue to target Congress and the political establishment in general, that we want them to know, we know what their game is. We get it. We, the people, understand what they're up to, and we aren't stupid. We know what's going on, and we want those folks on Capitol Hill and their supporters to know the people get it. And so the Washington Times is the vehicle. We could have gone with the Washington Examiner or the Washington Post or some other, major news source up there. But we decided to go with Washington Times because it was a truly a conservative voice in the D.C. metro area. And so we've now run something like 13 ads. There have been ads that are full-page ads in the Daily, as well as what is known as a double truck, which is a full-page ad in a weekly that is sent out. So I think we're up to 13 ads so far, and we're not going to stop. We're just going to continue, and our message is going to continue to pound Congress and continue to promote, for lack of a better word, the investigation findings of the cold case Posse in Maricopa County, as well as the natural born citizen decisions and precedents and so on. So we're going to continue forward with regards to Washington Times. The other thing we're starting to do, and I hope your listeners, if they see any of our ads, we hope you'll click on it, but we are starting to a Google ad campaign, and our first couple of ads is going to be more about just familiarizing folks on the Internet with who Article 2 Super PAC is, with the hopes of being able to continue to build the financial wherewithal to where we can do more ads, more pointed ads, and larger ads than what we're going to be starting off with.
Excellent. And they've been great, and I think I've covered most of them in my blog. And as we move into the final 2 months, are there going to be certain states that the Google stuff, I think, is great. Is that going to be a ClickBank?
Yes.
So yes. Great. Anyone out there, if you see on Google Article 2 Super PAC, all you have to do is click on it, and Article 2 Super PAC will make some money. And this is a very easy way when you're looking on to how to make money on the Internet. This is called a ClickBank, and there's no You get a certain amount for every time you click. So even if you click on it 100 times a day, that could net Article 2 Super PAC some funds for which to support these ads. So good idea and great going. But as I was saying, are you going to where is the next effort in the last 2 months? And will there be certain states that the Article 2 Super PAC is targeting? And what kind of media are you looking at? And can you give our listeners some kind of idea of how much it costs to do one of these ads so that we can start seeing some serious dollars come in to help the Super PAC?
Certainly, yes. The answer is yes. We have been contacted by a handful of states. They want to start running these ads in their local newspapers and so on. But the target states that we're really looking at is Florida, Ohio, Virginia. And those are the three primary states. And then there's a second tier state and third tier states that we're focusing on. And, of course, these are the red, blue states and so on. Actually, they're the swing states. And so what we are hoping to do is raise the funds to be able to go into a Columbus Dispatch newspaper or a Cincinnati Enquirer or the Tampa Bay Tribune or the Miami Herald. And the only way we can do that, obviously, is if we've got the financial capital to be able to do that. And, of course, one of the things donors want to know is if I give you this donation, how am I assured that it's going to go for a particular ad in a particular state? And I think that's a question that, any donor would have. So one of the things we are considering is if folks remember back in 2008, there were a lot of money bombs that were done by various groups to be able to get newspaper ads, television ads, radio ads up in certain markets in the targeted states. Well, we are going to be emulating a lot of that work that folks did back in 2008 so that we produce a commercial and or we develop an ad and then we put it out into a money bomb and say this is how much it's going to cost us to get, 5 days of this ad running full page in the Miami Herald and or, whichever newspaper we're targeting. So it's a way to I prefer money bombs and things of that nature primarily because it gives the donor a clear image of what it is they're buying and what it is they're supporting. And so we try to do as much as we can to we want to be able to provide our donors images, things that they can, they can see, they can feel, they can hear. And it just builds a confidence and a trust in our work. And in the long run, that is what we're really about, is building that long-term relationship. So it's when it comes to our work in October and November, look for a lot of money bombs because we are going to be hitting folks hard.
I think it was just a few nights ago, I've been in the process of moving, so I've had some pretty restless sleeps. It seems like I've been moving all over the country, and I had just this great vision of USA Today, that's everywhere. Having the full back page, usurping the weather to one of Article 2 Super PAC's ads. And I imagine that something like that would probably cost about $50,000.
Well, it depends. It depends on the newspaper, and it depends on the market. And, of course, during the election season, and because we're a PAC, You know, we can't build the long-term relationship with a Miami Herald or a Tampa Bay Tribune, so we're going to pay premium costs unless we're able to get a media broker to help us broker those deals and get them reduced substantially. So like with the Washington Times, we are, because we've run so many ads and we've built this long-term relationship, the cost factor is not a $50,000 price tag. It is in the thousands, but it's not $50,000. And so we have that relationship, and so, of course, that's to our advantage. But when it comes to the larger, not even larger, but to other newspapers in other cities and other states, you're looking at anywhere from, depending on the day you buy, you're looking anywhere from $6,000 to $15,000 per ad.
And that's, you know, we've got, what, 8 weeks left, a little less than 8 weeks until the election. And so wanting to be very aggressive, I'm doing everything I can, and I know others are as well. So we please ask our listeners out there to donate to the Article 2 Super PAC at art2superpac.com and really take a look at what's going on. There is a petition petition drive there as well to get Congress to begin to investigate. We have the only law enforcement agency that investigated this due to the surprise Tea Party in Arizona. Which is another side story here. Remember how great that rally was in September 2009 where I met you, how many millions of people were there and how many signs were there on the usurpation and the natural born citizen. And in, you know, a lot of the conservative news, conservative radio hosts and many of the Tea Party just abandoned that issue. And here we have, I'm so proud of the Surprise Arizona Tea Party for basically getting a petition up and supporting Sheriff Arpaio's investigation. And look where it's gotten us. It's, we have known these things, but this is the first law enforcement investigation that's worked. In the letter to the Commission on Presidential Debates, it was pointed out that the FBI doesn't believe it should overrule the will of the people. And, you know, when you have to remind the Commission on Presidential Debates that, you know, that a supermajority vote, simple majority vote, does not overrule the requirements of the Constitution, everything seems to come into play here. And so before we move on to, like, some other things regarding Puma and the Ron Paulers and where we are in this election cycle, I just wanted to ask you about the significance, or what is your main reason for well, it's hard to say this, Helen, because, you know, we've been set up again by the Republicans and Democrats, right? We're supposed to choose between the lesser of two evils, but they're both, evil is still evil. And we have Mitt Romney there, and the only thing I can think of, and perhaps you can provide more enlightenment or more support for this, is that we cannot allow Obama to be elected again, quote-unquote elected again or chosen again, because to do so would just confirm that it's okay to usurp the presidency. Just your thoughts on this.
Well, you know, I circling back to what you were just saying, back in 2008, many of us, including you and me, many of us were playing catch-up. You know, we would learn things about the law and or about a particular agency and so on and so forth after the fact. And what we learned back in 2008 is there is no federal or state agency not the Secretary of State, not the DOJ, not the FBI, not anyone that does any vetting of any of the presidential and or vice presidential candidates, let alone senators and House of Representatives. So there is no process in place that assures the people that the individuals that are running for office are qualified under the Constitution. Instead, this responsibility has been delegated or usurped or taken over by the political parties. And so what happened in 2008 with Mr. Obama was the Democratic National Committee put forward Obama as the nominee, and many of your folks are most aware, the certification of nomination forms that were then signed by Nancy Pelosi, the chair of the 2008 convention, and Alice Garamond, the secretary of the DNC, those nomination forms didn't have any constitutional language in it. Well, of course, none of us really learned about that until after the election. And so we were playing catch-up constantly. And Commander Kirchner, in following all of the activity, when he put his lawsuit together, he made sure he included the Commission on the Presidential Debates in that lawsuit and in his original lawsuit. And so fast forward to 2012, he reminded those of us that are doing this work right now, he reminded us that, hey, the Commission on Presidential Debates has a charter and a mission statement, and they set out the criteria for each individual that wishes to take part in presidential debates sponsored by the commission. They must meet certain requirements. One of those requirements is obviously Article 2, and part of Article 2 is the Natural Born Citizen Clause. And so we, in the commission letter, we made sure that all of that was pointed out in the letter, that the political parties are the ones that vet. And who says we should trust the political parties? Right now, the House has a rating of support of 15%. So why would we ever give such vetting power to either one of the parties, whether it's Republican or Democrat, constitutional, libertarian, green, whatever it might be? Why would the people ever give that vetting power to the party system, the political establishment? And so what we woke up to in 2008 was precisely what we wrote about in this letter, is that we, the people, need to take that power back. And we need to say we want an independent, nonpartisan body that vets every single candidate and goes into their background and everything to make sure they are truly natural born citizen. They're 35 years old and they've been in the United States for at least 14 years prior to running for president. So we've got to make sure that some sort of system is in place so that we, the people, never have to go through anything as crazy as this. But when it comes to Obama being on the ballot, Obama's going to be on the ballot. He is the Democratic Party's nominee, and they have created a system, they being the political establishment, have created a system where the people cannot penetrate. It's why we have no standing. It's why we can't get anything through the judicial system, because we are not part of that political establishment. So, therefore, penetrating that firewall that these critters have created, it removes us, the citizen, from them. And I also want to say that it's the citizen, it's the taxpayer that pays for these elections. We're the ones that pay for those ballots to be printed. were the ones that pay for the computer systems. Those are our tax dollars. But we have no say-so and no standing as to whether or not a candidate is eligible or not. That's crazy. So what they have effectively done, the political apparatus, the political establishment, what they have effectively done is removed themselves from any accountability from the people. There's a total firewall there, and there's just no other way to explain it.
That's correct. It really is that bad, because once we found out about the forms that Pelosi sent to 49 states and the form that was sent to the 50th state, you wonder what form they're going to send this year, and it doesn't matter because they've locked in everybody. Arizona Secretary of State Ken Bennett, you know, dropped the ball. And what other Secretary of State is going to refuse to put Obama on the ballot? So from the standpoint of this movement, it really is essential to get the word out, because that's the only thing we can do. Is so much doubt about Obama that people will stay away from him. Because I have, you know, Larry Klayman, as you know, just wrote to Bob Bauer, and the Patriots Union has got a mission out to have everyone write to their secretaries of state that says you cannot certify Obama to be on your ballot because you're committing perjury, essentially. You're lying. And that election fraud will be forthcoming. And yet, look at what we've done. We've filed these election fraud cases, and as you said, we have no standing because they've insulated themselves. So our only hope still is back to the people. Is still back there, that we sow enough doubt that, you know, that the 30 million votes that Obama was planning on flipping anyway to steal the election with the rigged machines won't help him, because it will be an overwhelming loss. So it's just brazen, in your face, the government in rebellion against the people. It's brazen. I don't know why we continue to pay taxes. I have no idea why we continue to give them, you know, any quarter at all. And it is at the point where this government has abandoned the Constitution. And we're not the ones in rebellion, but unfortunately it seems like we're going to have to go that way. So it's essential, again, that this word get out, and that Obama not be allowed to remain in that office, because it will just, I can just see them all sneering, it will just cement this distance that has been placed, the Washington establishment, or the establishment Republicans, Democrats on every side have removed themselves from accountability. So the only thing I can hope is that we're more alert than we were. And if a Romney, case in point, none of the Republican candidates say anything about this. Romney makes a joke about it. And, you know, and
yeah,
Chris Matthews.
There's a rebellion going on within the Republican Party right now. It's bubbling.
Yes.
What happened in Tampa on Tuesday of last week, was it Tuesday or Monday? It was Tuesday, when Boehner called for a vote on this new rule, Rule 16. There was a lot of stuff that happened in that 5 to 10 minutes that people are going to become more and more aware of. And what effectively Rule 16 does is it empowers whoever the winner-take-all is to kick out any delegate or alternative delegate at a whim. If they don't like them, if they don't support them, whatever, they can remove them. It is an abhorrent rule. And it's according to the Republicans, that are writing about it, it's a coup d'etat. And what happened was, oh my goodness, it was in reaction. This rule was apparently in reaction to the Ron Paul supporters. And of course, the Ron Paul supporters, along with the Tea Party, they've been trying, you know, rather just like any other political movement, they've been trying to infiltrate and take over the local and the county, the city, the state apparatus, so that their voices can be heard, because the Republican Party has become a progressive Republican Party. And people call them rhinos. Well, they're not rhinos. They're progressives. And so the Republican progressives. And so what the libertarians and the Tea Party folk naturally, innately understand is that the Republican Party has left me. And they left them on Tuesday of last week. That rule, Rule 16, is so in your face and tells you, the delegate, the citizen who wants to participate in the process of nominating a presidential nominee down the road, it tells you, well, if you don't like the guy that's elected, tough. You won't have any freedom to exercise your vote at the convention as a delegate. You either vote for the guy that won the state or the one that's been anointed by the Republican Party apparatus, or you're out of there. That's effectively what Rule 16 did. So there is a big, huge brouhaha occurring, and the Ron Paul, and I can't speak for Tea Party folk because I don't know if they've really studied it closely, but I know the Ron Paul people have, and they're flocking to Gary Johnson. They are headed straight towards New Mexico, and they are going to support that guy. And so you've got, I don't know how Romney can possibly win. He kicked out 8 to 10% of his voters on Tuesday. And I don't know where he's going to make up that 8 to 10%. Most of your independents, you know, those folks, they're so disgusted with the whole thing. They're likely going to stay home. They're not going to vote. Or if they vote, they'll write somebody's name in. They're so disgusted with the whole theater coming out of D.C., they've lost patience. So I don't know where the Karl Roves of the world think this 8 to 10% is going to come from, unless they think the birther community, which we make up about 15% right now, unless they think we're gonna vote with Romney. But if we are, then he's got to start talking the birther language. And there's no compromise.
What do you think? Do you think he will? I mean, Rove is just...
No, I do not think he will. No, I don't think he will. He'll use surrogates to do the teasers. Donald Trump's a surrogate. He's totally teasing. And quite frankly, after last week with all of his teases and his Twitters, and, oh, something big's going to happen at the Republican National Convention, and you guys will really like it. And nothing happened. And so people that have been following this, that have been engaged, the 15% of us, we're hardcore. We're not soft on this. And that's what I don't think these guys understand. We are hardcore. This is the Constitution. This is the line in the sand that, you know, all of the other erosion that you critters have done over the past couple of decades, you know, we've been asleep. We get it. But we woke up in 2008, and we get it now. And this is our line in the sand, and we're not going to let you go any further than you've already gone, and we're going to start pushing back. And so that's just got – I don't know what they're thinking. I do not know what they're thinking. It was the most dumbheaded, bullish thing, because Romney had the delegates. So why they felt compelled to implement this Rule 16 is beyond anybody who is thinking – why they did it. It was knucklehead stupid.
And so I have a couple of threads here One is that this is just all, again, a setup. So, you know, Obama walks away again with an election. So that's one thread. What do you think? I mean, do you think it's that far planned in advance that, for example, Romney was chosen because they know he'd lose to Obama? And now that this the Ron Paul scheme came up, and Ron Paul was the only one who actually was beating Obama in the polls for a while, out of all the Republican candidates, is this what we have? Just a grand old setup, among the political elite.
I think you can take two different points of view. One is cynical. And the cynical point of view is absolutely. Ron Paul was your front runner. Ron Paul was the Hillary Clinton of 2008. Ron Paul worked his fingers, legs, and his brain to the bone for the past 20 years, but more intensely over the past four, to be able to secure the nomination of 2012. He had the apparatus. He had the grassroots. He had all of that. And the Romney campaign or the Republican Party came in and said, oh, we can't have a libertarian head up the Republican Party. And so they did everything they could to make sure that the progressive Republican establishment stayed in place. And so far, they're winning. So you've got so the cynical point of view would be Romney was you know, put up in this position, and now his surrogates, because it's obvious that his attorney, the rumor is that the Romney attorney is the one that wrote Rule 16, and it was blessed by Karl Rove. That's what the rumor is. I don't have anything to substantiate that, but that's pretty much what's being whispered. And so what was the point in that? And the only reason you kick out 8 to 10% of your voting bloc is if you want to lose 8 weeks out before an election. I mean, that's the cynical point. Then the political point is they think they can pick up that 8 to 10% from some other body in which they can, you know, what is the word? They can pretend that they're on your side and they can say the right buzzwords and so on and so forth, and people will get excited. Ooh, Donald Trump's just, he says something's cool, you know, something big's going to come out about, you know, Barack Obama, whatever, and people will fall for it. And so that's the less cynical view. And so they've got to go shopping, and they've got 8 weeks to find somebody or find that 8 to 10%. And I really hope, I believe, I don't even hope, I know that the individuals that are natural-born citizen Article II line-in-the-sand people, that they're not going to fall for that again. They're not going to fall for the propaganda that's going to be coming out of the Republican Party to try to sway that 8 to 10% to get on their side. And they think that this is the miscalculation, the in my opinion. And that is, you have a constitutional, it is our country. If you remember back in 2008, Pumas had a saying, country before party. And so this is a country issue. Unemployment, economic, all of those issues are very important, no question. But I don't think they have the intensity behind them the same way the natural-born citizen question has. So it's that line in the sand. So I don't think they're not going to be able to hoodwink us, or at least I pray they won't. Now, there's a lot of people that are saying, of course, if you don't vote for Romney, then Obama's going to win. Well, that's called blackmail. You know, you got to vote your conscience, and you got to vote for the candidate that you believe is going to represent you the best, or at least 50-50 or 25-75. So, you know, that's the wrong, in my opinion, because it goes back to, okay, I've got two evil guys, and I've got to figure out which one's the lesser of two evils. Well, who wants to vote for evil? You know, I don't know anybody that wants to do that. So you've got to take that step back, and you've got to ask yourself, okay, if I vote for Romney, is that a vote against Obama? Or because he kicked out 8-10% of the voting base, is it just going to go away? And that way that vote doesn't mean anything. So you got to take a step back and ask yourselves, is Gary Johnson a guy you want to vote for? Or Ron Paul, write him in? Or Romney? Or, you know, of course none of your listeners will vote for Obama, and of course I won't. But, you know, what are the other options? Because right now, I don't know how. I do not know how to make up that 8-10%.
So it's the Ron Paulers meet the Pumas. This is what happened to, I remember that. I remember that happened to us big time. So do you think that it's even likely that that Johnson could be approached with this concept and secure, well, who knows, but to grab that 8-10%, to grab the Ron Paulers and grab the birthers who are also independents, Democrats and Republicans, lying in the sand constitutionalists. Do you think there's any chance that Johnson could be approached, and has anyone thought of that or tried?
I have no idea if anybody's thought of that or tried, and of course I don't even, I just know Gary Johnson's name keeps coming up on various threads that I read. I know little about him other than he's a small government guy. He's a libertarian. He's a two-term governor from New Mexico. I read a letter, I guess it was last week, with regards to his participating in the Commission on Presidential Debates. I know he just got his name on, I think it's the New Hampshire, either New Hampshire or Connecticut ballot. He's still working to get his name on all 50 states. So that's all I know of him. That's it in a nutshell. I don't know enough about the guy, and of course, what I'm saying about Gary is, or Mr. Johnson is this is what the Ron Paul people are basically saying, is that, you know, if Ron Paul's not going to run third party, they're looking for a third party candidate, and the guy they seem to be very attracted to is Mr. Johnson.
Do you think any chance Ron Paul would join Johnson on a ticket?
Oh, I have no idea. No idea. That's a question for Ron Paul.
My apologies for asking that. I guess I was just asking anything. Now, I was just thinking, what if it ended up being a third, a third, a third? I mean,
well,
the founders,
it could be. No, it could very well be. If there's a third party, a third party candidate such as Mr. Johnson, and he's peeling off Republican voters and independent voters, that's going to come from the Republican side of the aisle. The Obama would not be as affected by that. Maybe he would be. I doubt it, because he's gone so far to the left. And so the party that would be most affected would be the Republican Party, and the candidate that would be most affected would be Romney. So therefore, it would assure pretty much, I'd probably say a 50-50, I'd probably say 60-40 chance of Obama being reelected.
Oh, boy. The founders never contemplated could the Electoral College I'm thinking of where there's a three-way tie for the presidency. Is that even possible with the Electoral College?
The Electoral College is an animal that is unique in American politics. And what is a guideline, again, for the Electoral College is they must vote for a constitutionally qualified candidate. So when you've got that kind of language, again, that is demanded of the Electoral College members, and you've got a Romney who, by all the research that's been done thus far, that demonstrates that he is a natural-born citizen, and then you've got a Gary Johnson that nobody's done any research on, and then you've got a Mr. Obama that we've done 4 years of research on, it's a great question. It's a great question. It would be fascinating if it turned out to be two vice presidents that became, one vice president became the president and the other vice president became the vice president. Because if they're not, all natural born citizens, who knows? I don't know if Gary Johnson's a natural born citizen. And
yeah,
all
right.
Indicators
right.
Certainly indicate Romney is, so that's not a question, but Mr. Obama definitely isn't. He's a dual citizen. So dual citizen does not equal natural born citizen. And
but when
so
they
it,
by, oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, all I was just going to say was when it comes to the Electoral College, who knows? That's a wild, wild, wild card.
Well, you know, that would be really interesting because I think it's the 12th Amendment when they certify the votes in that early January 2013. Basically, if they don't meet the qualifications and, the chair of the thing, the joint House and Senate session, it really could be that, it could be a President Romney and Vice President Biden, just because they would have to certify that the candidates meet those qualifications. Now, we know what happened in 2009 with Nancy Pelosi and Dick Cheney. But if the Electoral College has enough guts and has enough sense and basically, reads the tea leaves, they can't vote for, they can't put their ballot in for Obama. So that would be extremely interesting and, ripe for bribery and threats and so forth and so on. I mean, Obama could threaten any state that whose electors dare to do that with their federal funding. And, there would be a lot of people who would cover that up. That would be very interesting. But, in light of the video, I guess, which I just posted with Boehner basically being told by the teleprompter to approve this, this rule, this is quite interesting because the Republicans are just part of this as well. To kick out the Ron Paulers.
Well, the saddest part of that decision is they didn't have to do it. They didn't even have to go there.
Romney
that's the part that I continue to scratch my head and ask myself, why on earth would they do that 8 weeks out from the general election? It just makes no sense.
Well, exactly what you said. If they were intending to lose, that's what they would have to do. And if you've got Karl Rove in there who helped McCain lose, then this is the setup again. This is the setup again for Obama. But it could also be, if say 90 million people just decide not to vote, that's a big deal. That means that that we could have a president elected with, less than 30 million votes.
Yeah, I think November 6th is going to be, is it November 6th or November 8th? I can't remember, but I think it's going to be a fascinating day. and the turnout. And, of course, we're all going to be watching how Spain and the Balderton Company manages our ballots and makes sure that our ballots are pure and clean. Of course, we already know that's not going to happen.
That's right. And there's that
it's going to be a fascinating day. And yeah. Article 2, you know, our mission is all about natural-born citizen line in the sand. And we're going to do everything we can between now and Election Day to educate the voter and to inform them that this election is voting for the Constitution, in our opinion, simply because of the Natural Born Citizen Clause. And like I said earlier, it's our line in the sand, and we've got to fight for it, because if we lose, then, you know, what it's going to result in is the Constitution being just totally shredded over the next 4 years, and it'll just be a document that will just collect dust. So, you know, I don't think losing is an option, and I wish somehow or another the RNC would you know, nullify Rule 16, extend a carrot or a hand to the Libertarian and the Tea Party folk that were kicked out, and say, you know, hey, let's make this right, and let's move forward, and let's win this election. I wish they would do that.
I'm wondering if a Romney appointment of Ron Paul as Treasury Secretary, or as head of the Federal Reserve, would be that carrot.
Could be. That could be a carrot, because that's Ron Paul's shtick, and it's a rightful and righteous shtick. And so, yeah.
Ron Paul would put himself out of a job if he was chair of the Federal Reserve.
But I think that would a move like that would absolutely seal that deal, and then remove that Rule 16. That Rule 16 has got to be nullified. It's just got to be nullified, because your base, your voters, those individuals, those party hacks and state party leaders and so on and so forth, that rule was a real slap in their face. And they've got to do something to make it right. Nullifying it would be a very good first step.
Do you know if that's being worked on in any way?
It should be. If it's not, it should be. And they're silly, and they are miscalculating horribly, because the Ron Paul folk, you know, say what you want about Ron Paul, say what you want about the Ron Paul folk, they are a very committed group of people, very committed, and they feel very righteous in their indignation, and right now they have every right to.
That's right.
So, you know, who knows? Who knows? I hope they are. It'd be the right thing to do. And there, in that video that you posted over at your website with Ben Swan, in that video, you know, when John Boehner is caught reading a script on a teleprompter, that's not good. That is not good. Explosive. And that'll only just tick off thousands more. And trust me, thousands of people are watching that video.
Well, you know, the one thing that, the one good thing that has come out of the Obama usurpation is the waking up of millions of people. We're a lot more alert now, such that if Romney wins, it's not going to be a cakewalk like Obama had. But, you know, I just think because the two parties are one, really, they're one, that this is a very serious time in which, you know, if people are considering not voting, and, you know, I'm considering that as well, or writing in, because I just I just can't justify my vote for Romney when he's basically treated the people the way, you know, the Democrats treated the Pumas. But as you pointed out, it was not necessary to treat the Ron Paul people that way, unless you have somebody like Karl Rove who is engineering a failure. I remember writing a post last February that you know, suggested that the reason they want Romney is because he'll lose to Obama. And now he's, you know, running neck and neck, but this was pretty bad to do this to the Paul supporters, just like it was the end of the Democrats to do this to the Clinton supporters and the Pumas. I think the Democrat brand is gone. I mean, they putting God and Jerusalem back into the Democrat platform brought boos from half the crowd. I don't think that's a very good sign. And with the Republicans, McCain threw the election, in my opinion. And so certainly if we're alive in 2016, if we have any semblance of our system, there will be a third party. But the other thing, Helen, that I just wonder is that if our next revolution is right around the corner, if there's just so much exposure of these banksters, of the international financiers, of the globalists, of the role of the politicians with all of their, you know, offshore bank accounts and so forth and so on, if this doesn't just signal that it's time to water that tree of liberty.
Yeah, there are certainly a lot of people that feel that way. I am one of those individuals who I'm an eternal optimist, and it's to a fault. And I more than understand my weakness there. But there are certainly a lot of individuals that feel that way. I am one that. Oh, how do I have faith, and I've got to hold on to my faith. And if all of these, because like you said, you've got the financial thing going on, you've got, and there's without question an imminent collapse. And it, you know, looks like it's either going to be this fall or it's going to be right after he's elected or whomever is elected. And so there's going to be a collapse of the dollar. That's going to happen. There's no way you can continue to rack up the trillions and trillions and trillions of debt without having the wherewithal to pay that back. So that being said, that something is going to change. Now, whether or not we go back to the gold standard, which I'm an advocate of, if we go back to the gold standard or there's another currency that will become the universal currency, who knows? But when you've got your economic occurring, then you've got the whole climate change folk and all the scientists there. Then you've got the natural-born citizen folk. Then you've got the Occupy Wall Street folk. You've got the Tea Party folk. And all of these people right now, we're semi or somewhat divided. However, there's some movement that's starting to happen to where these forces are starting to talk to each other, and there's more blending that looks like is going on than that's very, you know, behind the scenes and quiet and so on and so forth, that is starting to happen. Now, that's not happening with Article 2, so I don't want you guys to think that Article 2 is having these conversations. I'm just seeing some evidence of it in conversations with individuals that I follow. So you've got all of these, the whole divide and conquer mentality is starting to lose its force. And the people are starting to be aware, become more aware. And let me add the 9/11 truthers. That's a very important constituency. Believe it or not, there is a lot of 9/11 truthers out there. So you've got all these divide and conquer, and, you know, we're all conspiracy nuts. every single one of us. Every single one of us has been ridiculed beyond belief. All of us are racist. All of us are anti-whatever. And, you know, we're just horrible people. And so we, the horrible people, there's talking. And the people are starting to see, you know what, there is no division here. It's all in our heads. We are all one. And so I have a lot of faith that the people are going to rise up, and I don't think there needs to be any kind of bloodshed. I don't think there needs to be any kind of physical harm done to anyone. I just think we need to take back our country in a peaceful manner, and if that's marching to D.C. and sitting in those halls, and when a senator or delegate leaves his office, we go in and take it over, whatever we've got to do peacefully, we do it peacefully. You know, I just don't see, I just don't see brute force working. And if it did, it would be a horrible thing. I don't want to see that in my country. And I don't think anybody else does. So I'm one of those that I want to hold faith in the people that we can figure this out, and we can do what we've got to do, but we do it with integrity, we do it with peace, and we do it with a true love of our country in the forefront. And that doesn't mean, you know, I've got to bring some sort of club or whatever to force my will onto Washington, D.C. I think we just need to take over Washington, D.C. I think the thing, you know, people talk about it a lot on the blogs, and that is, you know, we just need to march. And there's some truth to that. If millions of people marched on D.C. and just created total gridlock, what did they do? They can't. If we're not armed, they can't shoot us, right? Or they can.
And, you know, for example, all the truckers just block the highways in and out. You know,
well, you know, years ago, that's there's something, there's some truth to that. Years ago, I think it was in the 70s, the late 70s or early 80s, there was a farm bill that came up before Congress, and it just went back and forth, and it was a horrible bill. Well, the farmers got on their tractors and they drove to Washington, D.C., and they stayed on the mall until they got the bill they wanted. And they, of course, when before they left, they tilled that lawn on the Washington Mall. They reseeded it. They made sure that they left it exactly the way it was when they got there. But they got what they wanted. And so that's the kind of thing that I guess I was raised with, you know, and so on. I just don't want to see my country and any of my fellow countrymen and women, whether I agree with them or disagree with them, I don't want to see any harm come to anybody. Just because we've got this political establishment that is hell-bent on you know, this crazy power trip they're on, doesn't mean all of us have to pay a price for that. And I don't want to see anybody get harmed just because they're stupid. And they're greedy. That's just wrong.
I saw a video of it was a farmer who had just had it with the police, and he drove his tractor and crushed all the police cars. And
yeah,
I thought that was very funny and very creative. You know, no policemen were in there, but all their cars were just crushed. And,
unfortunately, he's going to jail.
Unfortunately, yes, but, you know, if millions were there and we just sat down, we just wouldn't leave, and the truckers blocked the highway, really, they can't, although, you know, you never can tell, but they can't take the helicopters out on us and the drones and start killing us. So maybe it will be that miracle, because I think that's what we need.
So I live in Richmond, Virginia, and so I'm 2.5 hours away from D.C. And I have this fantasy in my head that the people just leave their homes and they march they walk to D.C. You know, of course, people in South Dakota and Arizona and California, they'll have to fly in, bus in, you know, or take a train in. But the people in Maryland, Virginia, D.C., we walk and we march. And we just take up 95, and it's millions of us. And we just go into the city and we pour into the city and we say, enough. It's over. Your little game is over. We know what you're doing. We don't approve of it, and we want you the hell out.
Put them on the first trash barge leaving the bay. So, you know, there's a lot of talk right now that my view is a lot of fear-mongering going on right now about martial law and the cancellation of the elections. Are you of the opinion that this is fear-mongering, or do you anticipate that that they're moving towards martial law?
I always look at the source of such stories, and for me, I think it's a lot of fear-mongering. But then again, there's morsels of truth in those stories. So you've got to take those morsels and apply them. But no, I think it would be, Obama is not, he's not evil. He's just a guy that, you know, thought he could be the president of the United States, and he, you know, was able to usurp the office because he had the puppets, or not the puppets, but the powers that be, the political establishment, to back him. He'd never be in there if it wasn't for Wall Street. I mean, that just would never have occurred. It was Wall Street. It was Goldman Sachs that put that man in the office. So you've got, and when I say evil, of course, when it comes to policy, you know, his policies are so far left to many people that it's evil. But I'm a policy person. That's my background. And I get policy, and I understand, you know, that there's compromise and there's debate and so on, and his executive orders and all of that. I get all that. But he's not the devil incarnate. He's a man that is thirsty for power. He saw an opportunity. He grabbed it. And he absolutely worked for 24 years with the Bill Ayers and the Weather Underground guys to get in there to be able to flip this country into a country that doesn't even remotely resemble a republic. I get all that. But I don't believe the man is dumb enough to put in martial law and so on. And so when I look at the sources that are selling that, they're fear-mongers. They've always been fear-mongers. So you got to kind of take it with a grain of salt, but there's morsels within that information that are extraordinarily valuable and help you prepare, just in case. But I wouldn't be afraid of that.
I thank you for saying that, because I've thought it was fear-mongering myself, and I just won't listen to that anymore. I think that all the reports of, you know, all the agencies buying hollow point bullets, and I know that there are foreign troops on United States soil, but I don't think that we outnumber them. I don't think that they would dare do anything unless it was backed up by U.S. military force. But the U.S. military is somewhere else. And so this is a very interesting time, and one last question, kind of boring question out of martial law and all that, but if, for example, Mr. Romney wins, does the Article 2 Super PAC intend to pursue vetting legislation in Congress and also at the state level?
That's a great question, and lots of people seem to be asking me this question these days. We started Article 2 Super PAC strictly and solely for election purposes, and the goal of Article 2 Super PAC was to give a voice to the people. We are not, we do not accept, you know, it's not that we don't accept, if we would accept it, quite frankly, but when it comes to corporate money and so on and so forth, we would accept that with no strings attached. If there are strings attached, we tell them to take their check and walk away. But our donors are $5, $10, $25, $50, $100 donors. And by the way, they're the most fabulous donor base I've ever worked with, and I've worked with donors for 26 years. So they're a fabulous, fabulous, fabulous group of people and very committed. And what we set out to do was solely to give a voice, a platform for the people, because we knew all of the other PACs weren't going to do it. And so we're not flush with money. We're paupers. And so that being said, we wanted to give a voice, and we knew how to work the internet and do things for free. And everybody on Article 2 is a volunteer. So all of our work is volunteer driven. There's nobody makes any money. So that being said, what we discussed and have discussed in the past is following Article 2 Super PAC or following the election, would we establish some sort of entity like a 501c4, which is a political entity under IRS rules, would we establish that so we could go up to D.C. and start lobbying? And there's discussion about that, and the answer I had with somebody that asked me about that today, that question would go out to our supporters and donors following the election, saying, okay, we've built a base, we've got all your names, we've got all, you know, this wherewithal. This is what is being proposed. Is this something you would support and continue to support? Because at some point, people need to start making a living. And so those dollars would then be turned into paying individuals to go up to D.C. and lobby and inform the grassroots and inform the donor base and so on. So it would become a relationship, a real donor organizational kind of relationship. So there has been discussion of that. And we are in the process, or we are discussing setting up a 501c4. And the goal, just so your listeners know, would be to set up a nonpartisan, independent, citizen-driven, not a Republican Party or Democratic Party-driven, which is a huge hurdle for us to overcome, but a citizen-driven vetting apparatus of presidential, vice presidential, as well as senatorial and delegate.
Wonderful. You know, well, we're coming to the end of our time, if you can believe it, but I guess we cross that bridge when we come to it. And Helen, it's always a pleasure talking with you and working with you, and I want to thank you very much for gracing this show with your presence.
Well, I thank you so much for having me on. And I don't get to talk about any of this stuff with anybody, so it was fun.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is America. This is our country. You know, they work for us. It's our world. And I mean, just our country. So I just want to thank you for everything that you're doing and look forward to seeing you again sometime soon.
You got it. Thanks.
Thank you. Good night, everybody.
So we bought a pack of cigarettes, and this is magnified, and walked off to look for America. Kathy, I said, as we boarded a Greyhound in Pittsburgh, like a dream to me now. It took me 4 days to hitchhike from Saginaw. I've come to look for America. Laughing on the bus, playing games with the faces. She said the man in the gabardine suit was a spy. And the moon rose over us.